pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We do have a quorum. Director Chalicott is absent today, but we do have a quorum. The report from, wow, Art. Is there a report from closed session, please?
We met in closed session at the last meeting, and there was no final actions taken, only direction given to counsel regarding the litigation listed.
Thank you very much.
Wait a second. There was some action, wasn't there? Didn't you get a haircut from last time?
That wasn't a closed session matter. I normally get scalped in public.
Okay, and once every year we have one additional part in the opening section, and this year, this month, it's the election of officers. So I would entertain a motion, please.
Yes, thank you, Madam President. I'd like to make a motion to nominate my colleague to my right, Greg Sanders, as president for this calendar year, and pursuant to our policy, nominate Don Villeneuve as vice president for this calendar year.
Thank you. I guess I'll second that. It seems like the best thing to do. Any further discussion on the motion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, the motion's carried, and Director Sanders is the president, and I'll excuse myself, and he'll take over. Thank you very much.
Are you nervous?
Big trouble.
Are you nervous?
I'm not nervous, but I am suffering from what can only be described as a terminal case of pine dust allergy. And so, Don, if I pass out, just kick me aside, and you can take over.
Okay. I'd like to take an opportunity, if I will.
Please.
I'd just like to express my sincere gratitude for the and respect for the outgoing president, who's done a magnificent job. And as a matter of fact, I think things really calmed down. Maybe it's because, you know, we defer usually to the fair sex, but I doubt that. I think it's basically she's done a really good job keeping us on track and moving along.
She is a nice person, isn't she?
Yeah, she's the only one on the board, I think, that qualifies for that.
And I'd like to echo those sentiments. It was a pleasure, Joan, working with you as vice president. We had a lot of difficult issues, and I think we benefited greatly from your leadership. So thank you on behalf of the entire board. Before we go on to the next agenda item, I would like to say a couple of things about what I hope this board can accomplish in 2005. You all know of these priorities. First of all, and probably the most obvious, is we have to conclude the Pine Knolls Tank project. I know you've read a lot in the newspaper about all of the controversy swirling around the Pine Knolls Tank project. Rest assured that there's more to it than meets the eye, and I would certainly welcome any questions from any of our constituents about what we're doing and why we're doing it and what we have to do in order to make this town fire safe. And the Pine Knolls Tank project is the linchpin in making this town fire safe. So that's priority number one. Number two, we have to complete the Water Master Plan Environmental Impact Report. The Water Master Plan Environmental Impact Report is the launch pad, if you will, for for the desalination project environmental impact report. I know it's frustrating sometimes because it seems as though it's just one study after another, and we don't see any tangible benefits quite yet. But we do have some processes that we have to follow that are mandated by state law, not the least of which is the California Environmental Quality Act. And we have to get through those steps before we can get to the point where we can construct a desalination facility and solve the water supply problem for the town. So step number one is to get the environmental impact report for the water master plan completed. Once that is done, then we can launch into the third priority, which is to commence the supplemental environmental impact report for the desalination facility. And it is my hope that the Water Master Plan EIR can be finished within a few months and that the supplemental environmental impact report for the desalination facility can be in draft form and ready for public circulation and comment by December of this year. If we can get that accomplished, then we will be very close to having a project that is ready to go out to bid and build. Along with completion of the Water Master Plan EIR and the desalination supplemental environmental impact report is the build-out reduction study or the lot retirement study. It is a very critical linchpin in the environmental impact report process that will lead us to getting the desalination facility built. The board has already adopted as a policy a build-out of 4,650 residential units, which will accommodate the existing water wait list, and at 4,650 residential units, growth will be capped. And we see that as a very necessary precursor to adoption of an environmental impact report and construction of a desalination facility. Along with that, we're going to have to implement the lot retirement program. It's going to be a very complex and very costly program. We are going to aggressively pursue grants. We plan to work closely with the State Coastal Conservancy and take the model that already exists in town in the form of the San Luis Obispo Land Conservancy's acquisition of lots in the Priority 1 and Priority 2 areas on Lodge Hill and perhaps expand that community-wide. The goal is to take out of the system by one means or another, all of them perfectly legal and all of them keeping lot owners whole, all of the lots that will not be built on so that they are in public ownership and will be kept as virtual open space forever. We also need to work hard on the funding for the desalination plant, and that's the next priority. We have a very good advocate in the form of Jerry Haliva, Sergeant Major Associates, working on congressional appropriations for the desalination facility, and we need to keep a full court press on Congress to make sure that at each budget cycle that the federal government goes through, there are appropriations made for the desalination facility. There has already been a very significant amount of money appropriated. Our water delivery system works, and we are going to have to begin the process of studying, designing new tanks, upgrading the facility, expanding the capacity, and getting on with the environmental documentation necessary to allow us to proceed with that project. When the Pine Knolls tank project is finished and the Stewart Street tank project is finished, we will have approximately an additional 2 million gallons in water storage, which our fire chief has deemed adequate for us to fight fires in this town. And we will have taken a very, very significant step forward in terms of making Cambria fire safe. We also need to get on with ordering, receiving, and installing the biosolids dewatering facility. This is a project that easily gets lost in terms of a lot of the other priorities, but I want to tell you it is a very, very significant and important project for Cambria, because once that facility is installed, we will save thousands of dollars every month that we're now incurring in having to haul the waste from the sewer treatment plant off-site. We have got to get that project implemented, and if my recollection is correct, we will save about $7,500 a month once that facility is installed. So it's a very critical component for us financially. Finally, I'd like to see us commence the environmental impact report for the community park on the East Ranch. There are a lot of potentially serious environmental issues that have to be addressed. I think there's a lot of support in Cambria for a park. The question is what kind of uses will be available at the park. We need to flesh that out, and the only way we do it is by going through the environmental impact report process. We are hopeful that the county is going to fund that because as it stands now, we don't have the money in the budget to do the environmental impact report. And I'm hopeful that by working closely with the county, we can receive the funds and get on with that project. With that, those are the priorities and the goals for 2005. Board members have any comments? Thank you. Okay, next item on the agenda is the agenda review. Are there any additions, deletions, or consent calendar items to be pulled? Tammy?
I have a few. First of all, Chief Putney just informed me before the meeting started that Chief Michael Sandin is out on call. He's one of the presentations from the United States Coast Guard. So we'll have to pull that off of this agenda, unfortunately, until they can reschedule maybe next month. The second item is item 7B. The minutes of the board meeting from December 16th, 2004. We'd like to pull that. And item 9B, there is nobody here from the old Santa Rosa Chapel. Is that correct?
Right, I
received an email that somebody was going to pull that off the agenda today.
Right. I was contacted by a representative, Don Dunlap, who is... as everyone knows, is the one of the powers behind the chapel there. And she would have been the one who would have been addressing the board, but she had a family emergency. She had an unfortunate death in her family. In fact, the funeral is tomorrow, as I understand it. And she asked me as a favor if we can just table it for 1 month. And I said that'd be no problem.
And that's
so we'll
perfectly
put it on
fine.
The agenda for...
Correct, for the February meeting.
February meeting.
And then the last item involves 10E. I just have a couple of ministerial changes to make, and I can do that in open session. It doesn't change your action in any mean. It's just a couple of dates I got wrong. So when it comes to that staff report, I can make it then. Okay. And that's the one for the agreement, the MOU between the district and the school district.
So when you render the staff report on that item, Tammy, you can inform us of the changes.
Correct.
Any other additions or deletions or consent calendar items to be pulled? Anybody from the audience want to have a consent calendar item treated separately? Okay, the agenda stands as amended. Next item on the agenda is the time for acknowledgments and presentations, and we'll have a presentation from Dave Flynn, the County Public Works, from the County Public Works Department on the Main Street Enhancement Project. Dave?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Dave Flynn with Public Works Department. Here to update you today on the status of Main Street Enhancement. Force the county to look at potential options that I'll go over with you. First, the remaining work, as we see it today, is the construction of the retaining walls, which is about a third of the work, stabilizing some of the slopes that haven't made it well through the recent rainstorms, as well as the final paving and striping. We have probably completed about 60% of all the pedestrian facilities. The county at this point, though, has really had met loggerheads with Madonna on processing the remaining third of the contract. And so at this point, what we are doing is directing Madonna to conclude their work on the outer thirds of the project, that being from Burton Drive to Bluebird Motel and from Tamsin Drive to Cambria Drive, and complete all work in that section by March 1st. We are then looking at disbanding the Madonna contract and hiring a subsequent contractor to come in and finish the walls and the job. In processing that, though, that will require us to re-advertise a portion of the work, and we would not expect to be out there with a contractor to do the wall construction until most likely late April. And that's the process that our board is taking with the contract. By the time we really have the walls completed and we're in a state where we can finish the entire work, that would really be July of this summer. That would reflect in the job completely in place between Burton Drive and Cambria Drive. We understand that this has certainly been an imposition on the community, and we appreciate the patience of the community. I'm surprised that we do not get as many calls on this project as I would suspect we would get. But we do try to attend to the needs of the pedestrian access that we've heard a lot of complaints about, various business access, as well as what are some of the new features along the road. And we're always open to listen to other citizen concerns, your board's concerns, about any potential inconveniences. Looking ahead, though, and we will get it to an end of this project, I can assure you, we at the Public Works Department are probably as much interested in finishing this project as the community would like to have it concluded. But we also need to look ahead. And the last few items I had on the status report was about landscaping and streetlights that would be in that corridor in the future. The Cambria Land Conservancy Group has stepped forward to first develop a overall landscape plan, as well as a kind of a phased approach of doing landscaping in this corridor. The district supervisor has also provided some funding for them to initiate this work. And from discussions, they would like to be out there probably this spring to do some initial landscaping. And again, it would be phased in over a period of years. So we are working with them, and hopefully as the year progresses, we can see some landscapes start developing along the corridor once the road work is completed. The second item is the streetlights, which has been discussed, I believe, at your board with our planning department as well as the NCAC in the past. The county does have access to approximately $250,000 for doing street lights and other hardscape enhancements through a separate grant that will be coming available in 2006-2007. And our planning department will be working both through NCAC and with your CCSD staff, and probably at some future CCSD meeting, on street lights, street light maintenance issues, and the ability of the community to take on street lights in that corridor. And we would expect that would probably be something that may start developing over the next few months. With that, that concludes my status report, but I'd be happy to answer any questions that the board or the public would have.
Thank you, Mr. Flynn. I commend you for standing up and giving us a report and subjecting yourself to the possible wrath of the people that are sitting behind you. This project has taken a lot longer than anybody anticipated. I do have a question, but before I ask mine, do the board members have any questions of Mr. Flynn?
Does this delay mean that we have to come up with more money?
Not.
I say we, I don't mean the county. I mean Cambria.
No. In fact, the CCSD, and we've met with Bob in the past about one of the potential conflicts was a major water line that was delaying work on the retaining wall by Tamsin, which we made other choices that did not. What our approach is going to be, though, is to have Madonna go ahead and pave out the sections on the outer thirds of the projects, and then only pave the remaining portion, which would be approximately 2,000 feet right near the school. And with that, the ideal time would be during the summer months so that we aren't aggravating the school traffic at that time.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, Dave, very much. Right. Appreciate your report. Next, we'll have a report from Scott Cathy, Regulatory Coordinator for the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary. Welcome.
Good afternoon. I'm here today on behalf of Superintendent Bill Duros. He unfortunately had a string of scheduled meetings in Washington, D.C. this week. It conflicted with this meeting and couldn't be here, so I'm here on his behalf. And I'm here to talk about an incident that occurred on January 7th, a sailboat grounding that took place just north of San Simeon Cove at Royal Laguna, and wanted to thank the community and thank the Community Services District for your role in the recovery of that vessel and the protection of the sanctuary there. It was, unfortunately, a tragic accident. There was a loss of life involved. And we certainly don't want to minimize that. There were a large number of responders that arrived on scene early on for the search and recovery phase of the operation. Hearst Castle Fire, Cambria Fire Department, NCORE, State Parks, California Department of Forestry, Sheriff's Department, CHP, and, of course, the U.S. Coast Guard. And once the initial response phase is ended, and the search and recovery is completed, these incidents usually then transfer over into a phase two, which is protection of property and the environment. And that's where the National Marine Sanctuary tends to get more involved. The environmental threats from vessel groundings in general are multifaceted. You've got the damage to the habitat from the vessel itself as it rolls around or breaks up. You've got entanglement hazards, particularly in this case from a sailboat. You've got sheets and line, shrouds, that type of thing that can entangle wildlife. You've always got the threat of a fuel spill, and in this case, the owner did report to us that he had estimated 50 gallons of diesel on board. And in this particular case, the vessel went aground on a beach surrounded by elephant seals. And just up the beach, we had breeding populations beginning are involved in the breeding season. So in many ways, this was a very sensitive site. And NCORE, which obviously is a part of the CSD, arrived on scene, was instrumental in effecting the rescue of the sole survivor and the recovery of the woman that perished. But after that phase ended, they stayed on and salvaged a large amount of entanglement and toxic debris, potentially toxic debris that had broken loose from the wreck and washed ashore, and really began a preemptive salvage effort there, containing the damage to a relatively small area. And I know that's not necessarily their number one mandate, and we very much appreciate what they did early on. And they remained over the next couple of days returning and picking up flotsam and debris from the wreck site. I'd also like to recognize Ben Bohr in particular. He was able to speak to the salver who had been hired by the insurance company. The salver was in Castroville, 140 miles away, and Ben was able to give him an on-the-ground report of the scene, what the ground conditions were like. As you may recall, January 7th, we had a severe winter storm moving through this area. The seas were up from 12 to 18 feet. We had driving rain and winds. And so by giving him a very good description of the area, Ben saved him having to come down and survey the area before putting together his salvage package and driving down here from Castroville. That basically saved us a day that moved up the salvage by one day. And that's critical because vessels don't last long on this shoreline unless they're a steel hull. This was a fiberglass wood, and you only have a few tide cycles if you're going to conduct any kind of salvage in one piece. That's going to be done and have to be done very quickly. So that was instrumental in achieving that goal. Also, Ben helped the owner in a very personal way. This was his home. He had not only lost someone very dear to him, but he lived on the boat. And so Ben went on board with our enforcement officer and tried to get some personal effects for the gentleman while he was still in the hospital. And NCORE assisted in that as well, trying to recover as much as they could. So I just want to very much acknowledge what NCORE's role was in this, particularly both in the rescue and for us in the salvage, really going above and beyond what they would normally do. And I appreciate that volunteer spirit. There were several other responders from the area, too. And the thing that I want to highlight here today is, and the thing that really struck us at the sanctuary, was the amount of teamwork and cooperation that we received from the community in this. There really was no one group that stood out more than the other, and they all were critical to a successful salvage of this vessel. The Marine Mammal Center, there are some local volunteers here. P.J. Webb organized a couple of volunteers in, upon our request, came out to the site, spent 2 days in the driving rain, basically watching the backs of the responders. We had about seven adult or semi-adult male elephant seals in very close proximity to the wreck, and basically they monitored the elephant seals to let the responders know if they had one coming up on their back. We're in the mating season. These are sub-adults, so they're kind of out of the activity on the fringes. They're hot-blooded, and they're upset because they're on the fringes of the activity. So that was a very critical role that the Marine Mammal Center played in protecting both the folks on the beach and the elephant seals from any particular hazards from the salvage operation itself. I want to also just go back and acknowledge the members of NCORE that were on the team that day that responded and helped out with the salvage. It's Ben Bohr and Steve Bitto, both coordinators of the team, Tom Benton, Dan Martin, Richard Stacy, Wayne Gracie, and Mike Oliver. In addition to the Marine Mammal Center, Hearst Corporation was very, very helpful to us from the very first call. They gave us full cooperation, full permission to cross their lands. This was on their private beach. And they offered up before we even asked. They said, you can dismantle fences. If you need to dismantle fences, go right ahead. And they went one step further and sent members of their ranch staff to do that for us and to reassemble those fences behind us because they had bulls in the pasture there, and we couldn't just dismantle the fences and leave them dismantled. And they saved us having to go find a contractor to do that too. That could have also slowed down the salvage effort quite a bit. The salver arrived on day two on Saturday from Castorville, and their first attempt at salvage failed. They had equipment problems. They got bogged down in the mud there and put out a call to Windsor Construction. And within 45 minutes, Windsor was on scene with very good equipment, good trained operators. They knew the lay of the land there and were very proficient in getting their equipment into position and salvaging that vessel. In the end, we were able to salvage the vessel whole. And within 3 days, other than some lead that was from the keel, you couldn't hardly tell there was a vessel grounding at that site. We also had great assistance from state parks. They helped with traffic control, with security on site. Ranger Bill Payne, who is works part-time for the sanctuary. We have a cooperative enforcement agreement with state parks and fish and game. He was out there coordinating the scene together with Michelle Roost from our San Simeon office here and did an excellent job of providing security and coordinating the different agency efforts in the salvage. We also had Lieutenant Mark Crossland from Fish and Game. He's the skipper of the Bluefin out of Morro Bay. He came up on day two, which was the most intensive operations for salvage, and made sure there was a site safety plan in place, coordinated the different folks on scene to make sure no one was hurt, did a really good job with that. CHP Officer Tim Wilson was out there, particularly on day two, making sure that we didn't have traffic problems out on Highway 1 as they vectored this heavy equipment onto the site and off the site. And then the Sheriff's Department helped us out quite a bit, too, on the very first day because they had to interview the survivor. And in that interview, he was able to find out who the insurance company was so that we could start the salvage effort much more quickly. We were able to contact them on day one. They were able to open up a fund to begin the salvage effort, which, again, would have been delayed by a day had they not been able to do that. And a day in that kind of, in those kind of seas with that storm activity, we would have probably had hundreds and thousands of pieces of debris strewn all up and down the shoreline there. So just the group effort of the community here was really tremendous. The teamwork was very impressive to us. The cooperation and just dedication of the folks working in this community is really something you should be proud of, something you're fortunate to have, and something we're fortunate to have at the sanctuary. So we just want to give you our thanks and appreciation. Since we have these in-core members are all here today, I think with the exception of Wayne Gracie, we'd just like to present to them a small token of our appreciation, some sanctuary
terrific.
Caps. And
why don't we have them come up so you can... Yeah. Why don't all of the North Coast Ocean Rescue people in attendance come on up and be recognized? Chief, how about you?
These guys deserve the credit, not me. They were on there.
Okay. Very.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you all for your dedicated service. We're particularly proud of Ben Boyer, our employee, who is kind of the jack of all trades and everything to everybody here in town. So thank you, Ben. Appreciate it. Before we go on to the next item, Chief, I understand you were personally involved in an ocean rescue a few weeks ago. Is that right? And you pulled a person out of the surf yourself. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. That was my Christmas Day present.
Yeah. Congratulations for a job very well done. And I'm sure the person that you aided really appreciates your effort. You saved the person's life.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Mary Ann Carson from the Cambria Chamber to make a presentation.
Mary Hello. Ann. Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. My name, of course, is Mary Ann Carson, and presently I'm the executive director of your local Chamber of Commerce here in Cambria. Now, your Chamber of Commerce was organized in 1932 in order to advance the general welfare and the prosperity of, and in order to promote tourism and commerce to the area of Cambria. So to help in that effort, the Cambria Chamber of Commerce this year, among other things, has produced a 3-minute promotional video, which we will be marketing to travel, trade shows, tour riders, travel organizers, and most importantly, we're going to send it to TV stations, target area TV stations, who will use it for their travel sections. So I've brought it here today, and we can take a look at that. At this time, speaking of the general welfare of the community, I'd like to say a word on behalf of the Community Center of Cambria. Certainly, a vital community center is an integral part of a community, particularly if it can focus on the youth of the community. The Chamber of Commerce has always supported the Cambria Chamber or the Community Center here in Cambria. And not only that, I've had the opportunity to work with the staff. I've found them to be very organized and very helpful, hardworking people. So I'm sure the Chamber and all of us would like to see a vital, youth-oriented, successful community center here for our town. And back to the Cambria Chamber promotional video of Cambria. Shall we take a look at it?
It's 3 minutes.
3 minutes.
Great. Roll it.
Go ahead. Cambria, where the pines meet the sea, where the beauty of California's central coast mingles with history, charm, the arts, fine dining, wines, and of course, romance. It's all to be found in Cambria. Our quaint community was established in the early 1800s as a fishing and quicksilver mining town, soon becoming a lumber and dairy center as well. Known over the years as Santa Rosa, Roseville, San Simeon, and even Slabtown, Cambria got its current name in 1869. Historic remnants of our past can be enjoyed at the old Santa Rosa Church, the Squibb Drake House, the 100-year-old Brambles, now a restaurant, the Bianchini House. Oh, and don't overlook the Hooskow. Today, the pine-covered hills and rugged shoreline attract artists and musicians for its natural inspiration. It attracts families for fun and adventure. And, of course, couples in search of that great romantic getaway. A wonderful weekend or longer stay is a short, beautiful drive away from just about anywhere in California. Located midway between Los Angeles and San Francisco, Cambria has a great reputation for its centralized spot on the famous Highway 1. Just 6 miles from Hearst Castle, a definite destination during your stay in Cambria. Take advantage of your time here with your choice of tours throughout the day, and in season, evening tours of this famous historical icon as well. Cambria has a special magic. It's the kind of place where you can stay as busy as you'd like, or sit back, take it easy, and take in the gorgeous Pacific sunsets while you're spending time with nature. Don't miss the boardwalk along Moonstone Beach. No hustle bustle, no hassles, just an eco-friendly natural setting that provides a leisurely stroll at your own pace along one of California's most scenic beaches. A short drive north towards the Piedras Blancas Lighthouse, a truly unique experience awaits you with one of nature's grand sights, the elephant seals sunning and snoozing on the beach. Back in town, visit both West Village and East Village to find the variety, fun, arts, and whimsy that makes Cambria so special and enchanting. Pamper yourself, too. Day spas feature facials, massage, manicures, and pedicures, including a full spectrum of body care and wellness services. Kayaking is a growing favorite that allows you to get up close and personal with the thrill of the ocean. Bike rentals and scenic tours are also available, including helicopter touring. Holidays are extra special in Cambria, too. It's such a joy to avoid those crowded, noisy malls and do your Christmas or birthday shopping in a relaxed, unique boutique atmosphere in Cambria, where you're sure to find that something for someone that's just right. Find out more on our website at www.cambriachamber.org. In any season, for any reason, where the pines meet the sea, it's the perfect place to be. Cambria. Come visit this weekend.
I just want to thank you for being our premier audience. And if there's any questions, I'd certainly glad to answer them.
Can you get rid of those noisy helicopters? I noticed right in the beginning when they had Slabtown and Santa Rosa, there was a picture of Don Villeneuve in there, the guy with the white beard. Did you notice that, Don?
That was an ancestor of mine.
Well, it's very well done.
Thank you.
And I think it reminds us all how much we take for granted and how truly beautiful our community is. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Next item on the agenda will be a report from the Sheriff's Department. Is there a Sheriff's Department representative here? Yes.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm Commander Robin Weckerly, representing the Sheriff's Department today. As most of you know, Deputy Steve usually comes to the meetings. He's been transferred to bailiff for only a year. He will be still attending evening meetings in the community. And if you need something, he's still always available. In the meantime, you get me. As you can imagine, recently most of what we've had have been weather-related events. The only thing I really came across that was noteworthy was we did have a gas theft at a local gas station. One of our deputies put himself in prime position to spot the individual. A foot pursuit ensued where the guy ran and the deputy, having 30 years on, got in the car and followed. And we did, with the help of state parks, surround him and literally treed him. The deputy that was running after him couldn't see him, couldn't find him, looked up, found him about 30 feet up in a local tree, way up high to the point where we were afraid he was going to, you know, break the limbs and fall down. With a little negotiation, he came down out of the tree and was arrested for the gas theft and hitting a car here in Cambria. Other than that, things have, other than some neighborhood squabbles lately, things have actually been pretty quiet here, other than, like I say, the weather-related incidents. And that's my report for this month.
Thank you. Any questions by board members? Thank you.
Thank you.
The next item on the agenda is something new. Every month, we are going to have a dedicated agenda item that will allow us to keep track of progress being made on many of the priorities that I outlined earlier this afternoon. That dedicated agenda item is going to be a progress report on the Water Master Plan EIR, the desalination EIR, the desalination facility, water storage facilities, et cetera. All of those critical infrastructure items that we so desperately need to upgrade. Bob, your turn.
Well, good afternoon, and Mr. President, members of the board and audience. This is something new, so I'll refine this as we go. This will be fairly just informal presentation.
That's what it's intended to be.
Okay. I would like to have a little more in the way of graphics in the future, but the I'll just start off with the desalination project and move on from there. And if I don't mention something, just let me know, and I'd be glad to talk about another project. Desal project first. Our efforts have been focused quite a bit on the Proposition 50 state funding application deadline. That was this last January 18th. So to get us in lined up for that, we had to do two things. We had to write an urban water management plan update because our old update was fairly out of date, I think 15 years or more old. Those are supposed to be done every 5 years. And in order to qualify for a state grant, you have to have an approved urban water management plan on file with the state. So that's why we stopped and did a draft back in December. Now that's going to be updated. There's some coordination that has to happen yet on that, as well as some noticing in the newspaper before that can be formally adopted. But the goal is to try to have that for you by February. So when the funding agency gets to that point, we have that checked off of their box that it's done. This grant is for $5 million possibly. So it was a fairly substantial amount of money to go after. I'm not sure we'll get it at this point. We should know somewhere around the March-April timeframe. The funding can actually occur as early as June of this year if we are successful. We had quite a bit of help from Corello Engineers in putting this together, so they deserve a lot of credit. Connie Davidson had a lot to do behind the scenes in putting this together. It's a fairly extensive document, probably about 75-80 pages long. So that did go in on the 18th of this month in time for their deadline. So that was really the focus of our attention in the last month or so, was getting lined up for that Proposition 50 funding from the state. Now that funding can be used as a match fund towards the federal fund. The federal funding we've been working on slowly, but we are making progress on that. The that, as you recall, is a we had a $10.3 million authorization through the Water Resource Development Act Fund. We were trying to get matching credit language in the WRDA 04 bill, but that bill died a slow death last year, so it didn't get in there. So that makes the state funding all that much more important because that can be used towards the federal funding. The right now, there's about $425,000 that the Army Corps has available to apply to our project with some reappropriating that might go up to a little bit over $1 million. So we do have some funds there. We are doing some detailed reports with them so that they can complete their full package so that their colonel can sign off on it. Our goal is to have that signed off within a month. So that's where we're at with DSAL on the funding part. There have been several meetings on that as well. We did have a very good meeting with state parks as far as getting some preliminary introductions about our permitting process, where we have to end up getting a permit to allow some exploratory drilling out on the beach. We're looking still at the feasibility of a beach collector well, which reduces the environmental impacts of the project quite a bit if that's proven to be feasible. So that is underway right now. As far as a supplemental EIR, EIS, you mentioned by December 05, we're going to try everything we can to get that accomplished. That will be tiered off of our water master plan EIR. So I'll segue into the water master plan, unless there's a question on DSAL at this point.
Bob, I do have a question. Does the project cooperative agreement allow the Corps of Engineers to reimburse us for some of the expenses we've incurred prior to the time the agreement is fully executed by both parties?
No, it does not, and we were trying to get the credit language with the WRDA 04 to cover some of our past expenses, but okay. Without that language, it will not.
Okay.
Okay. The I'll move on to the water master plan. Basically, the reports are done. There's a few editorial corrections and a couple of spots on them that I've noticed. But the key to that is the build-out reduction study that's ongoing with RBF. That work did get slowed down, but I think it was a worthwhile cause. We stopped work back when the county submitted its draft Cambria Community Plan. So we went into a great deal of discussion with them on where they're at with their build-out numbers, as well as numerous conversations and going through the details on our land use database. And we provided that information to the county planning staff as part of our response to comments on that. The more we can coordinate with the county, I think the better off we'll be in getting some assistance to accomplishing our goal. And that's what we're trying to do, is just collaborate as much as possible with them. We've had some very good conversations with them recently. We know they're coming out with their draft EIR sometime in the April-May timeframe. So we'll continue those conversations with the county planners. The purpose of that, of course, is to build some mitigation measures into the Water Master Plan EIR, and that's to address the growth-inducing aspects of the water projects. So our intent is to have this Water Master Plan EIR at a program level, and that will focus mostly on the growth issues associated with a new water project. The build-out reduction plan will develop those mitigations and the steps we need to cap that number. As you mentioned, the 4650 number is our goal. So that's in process right now. The EIR itself they have about four sections written thus far with them, but of course it's going to depend on the outcome of the build-out reduction study. So that's where that is right now. We're having some meetings next week and the week after with RBF, so I should know more after that point. I'll move on to the next project.
but could I ask a question?
Director Villeneuve, please.
Has the county been cooperative and receptive to accepting the GIS that data that we have on the lots and buildable lots and they seem to be having we've got quite a bit of a difference in terms of the estimation and data on that.
I believe they have.
They're pretty archaic as far as some of the basic information they've been able to that they were working mm-hmm. with the first time we went around.
Yeah, I think it's been a pretty healthy exchange of information lately with them, and we are going to hopefully augment each other with our work. For example, we're going to be developing an ordinance that would restrict the density numbers to no greater than what's in an existing deed restriction. Mm-hmm. And they're coming up with some other ideas and some of their work as well that will help augment what we're up to. So I think together we're going to have a much better success rate than working separately. So I think the staffs for both the district and the county realize that, and I think it's coming together fairly well right now. So that's. I hope that answers your question.
Well, that's encouraging. I hope they really do, upgrade their database on that.
They have, and they've been providing information from their database to our consultants as well. They have a voluntary lot merger process, for example, that they've been doing for several years now. So. The person in charge of that has been very helpful in providing information to the district and so forth. So that's going well. Of course, they're planners. They're at staff level, just like I'm at staff level. It's going to depend ultimately on what the Planning Commission and what the Board of Supervisors decides in their approval steps. So that remains to be seen as well. Should I move on, or does that?
Yeah, okay. Please.
Next project I had down was the East-West Ranch Waterline, and that you've seen the construction going on. The contractor has been plagued with some minor leaks that he's chasing around the last few weeks, besides the weather that hit us that slowed him down. I think he has the two vaults to complete, one at Ardeth and Madison and one at Windsor at Heath by the wastewater treatment plant. I feel that weather permitting, and he'll probably be closer to wrapping up around the end of February, probably end of February, early March time frame. That's a little bit beyond what we thought originally.
And, Bob, we've notified all of the residents on Park Hill about the increase in water pressure that they're going to experience as a result of this. Is that correct?
Yes, we have. In the past, there's been some door hangers and so forth done. Again, Connie Davidson helped with some of the public outreach materials. They've also been posted on our website. So if people want to refresh themselves on that, then go to cambriacsd.org and look up the project, and you can look at the maps and so forth that are
posted. Still making available instruments by which they can measure their water pressure and determine whether or not they need a pressure regulator valve. Is that right?
Right, yes. The front desk at the district office has a box full of test gauges. So people just come up to Regina, whoever happens to be there, and ask to borrow a test gauge and then return it, sort of like checking out a video. You know, write down a phone number or whatever, and the person, here's a gauge. Go hook it up on where your garden hose is hooked up and check your pressure.
And will the water flowing through that new pipeline be gradually increased so that there's not a sudden flow of additional water that will increase the pressure on Park Hill instantly?
Well, we'll be stepping it up probably in 5 PSI increments.
Okay.
So we're not planning on just cranking everything right away.
Right.
So that we'll be looking at our own facilities as well as monitoring what's going on with houses. Pine Knolls I was going to talk a lot about because there's a whole discussion item on that, unless you had something in particular you'd like to hear. It has been consuming a lot of our staff time, I will say that. As far as the Stewart Street storage project that you mentioned, we need to look at the replacement of the old water yard pump station at the same time with that. I know Jim Adams has been having some discussions with our consultants on the preliminary scope of work to start the pre-design on that work. So that's there is something happening there. Beyond that, on water, I know there'll be some more pipelines that we have to account for. Where there's a few bottlenecks. Once you get the storage, you're going to have to still take care of some piping bottlenecks, and also stretch out the funding and look at the cash flow and whether we can do things as quickly as we want, or if we have to stretch it out probably over a much longer period so the cash flow isn't as extreme. And that I have to work with Patrick Bradley on yet. So that concludes my water report, and unless there's other questions.
Thanks, Bob. Any questions from board members? Bob, in terms of the report for February, I'd like to know, and I think the other board members would like to know, how much money we have spent trying to bring the county around to our point of view on capping growth in Cambria. That is, having to deal with the county's draft community plan, and you can limit it to just outside consultants. We know that it's burned up a lot of staff time, but I think it would be an interesting number to have in front of us.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. Thank you.
Next on the agenda are the managers and board reports. Tammy, the general manager's report.
Okay, thank you. Under administration, I have we've selected a district employee team to begin working on our district mission statement and objectives, so that's all I'm going to say about it now. They'll meet first initially in a couple of weeks, so details will follow about that. I'd like to remind the general public and the board about Mission Country's disposal spring cleanup week. I kind of failed to do that late last year, so I want to make sure I mention it more times than necessary for the folks at home and here. It's April 25th through April 29th. And so that's your regular pickup day. You can put out extra debris, landscaping, or recycling. If there are larger items such as appliances or furniture, the folks need to call Mission Country and make an appointment, and I know they'll be happy to pick that up for a very small fee. To remind folks that Monday, February 21st, is a district holiday, and the district offices and operations will be closed that day, but customers can contact our 24-hour answering service at 927-6223 with any reports of service problems or concerns. It's been a really busy last month for human resources, as I report. We do have our two fire engineers. Their offer letters have been sent to them, and they have accepted. One will begin on February 4th. His name is Ryan Maloney, and so he will transfer from the Vets Hall over to the fire department. And our second one will begin February 6th, and I'll wait to announce that name until I'm final that person has turned in their resignation at their other job. So those people are ready to go within the next couple of weeks. We got 19 candidates that interviewed for the water treatment operator vacancy that we had, and we also received one of our water treatment operator retirement notices. He will be retiring, Michael Beauchamp, Beauchamp, to his colleagues and coworkers. Those of us from Louisiana and maybe others call him Beauchamp. Anyway, he is going to retire in late April, so we took this opportunity to be able to have some really qualified candidates, and so we actually have one gentleman starting tomorrow. He will begin training, and the other one will begin in a few weeks. So we've moved really quickly on these recruitments. Got a lot of thanks to some staff members who have worked closely with me, particularly Monique Madrid and Jim Adams and Brian Bodie. Our recruitment for our reserve firefighter is closed, and Monique's working very closely with Mike Gallagher in the fire department to get those interviews scheduled. And then now that we've got to replace Ryan Maloney for our maintenance tech, we've already recruited, and Monique is busy getting those evaluated and interviews set up with those candidates. And, of course, Vern Hamilton is still working very closely with us on the assistant fire chief, and all of those plans are to be finalized by the end of this month, which is actually Monday. So there's been a lot of HR work going on. For Parks and Recreation, highlights from their January 5th meeting, there were amendments to their 2004-2006 PROS priorities, and they were recommended, thoroughly discussed, and approved. So there's an agenda item on there today. They concern support of the Cambria Community Center and then a ministerial change with regard to the Cambria Historical Park Master Plan. Their next meeting in February has been canceled due to some holiday issues. So the PROS commissioners will meet next on Wednesday, March 9th at 5 o'clock in Suite 204. I know that Bob mentioned that we're going to talk about the Pine Knolls Tank project. I just thought maybe I could state just a little bit early that we did attend, staff did, the SLO County Planning Commissioner meeting on January 13th. We had an opportunity to make our public presentation of the project. It was very well received. Got some really good comments from the commissioners and some good questions. We also had the opportunity to introduce our alternative number 4, which moves these tanks in as close as possible onto the district's property. The area that we now are impacting is a bit less than the area initially proposed for the one concrete tank design. So we've done a lot of work working together with the SLO County staff and the Coastal Commission staff. I did receive an email day before yesterday from Matt Jansen suggesting that, of course, with conditions, they are going to accept and recommend acceptance to the Planning Commission at their meeting for this alternative number 4. We have remaining some questions that were posed by the California Coastal Commission. They're very technical. They are questions we have answered before, and we are finishing up our responses to those. Boyle Engineering, Mike Nunley, has been working with us to get those responses finalized, and we hope to get those over there in the next day or two. And then last but not least, we've got a couple of things that I want to change in my reporting. Well, first of all, I wanted to make mention, because President Sanders mentioned Ben Bohr, an employee of the district on NCOR. Steve Bitto is also an employee of the district and NCOR. They do such a really good job, but it's really helpful having employees on that team as well. So I wanted to mention Steve. I have meetings with Joellen Butler. She's the executive director for North Coast Swap, and they are our conservation easement holder for the East West Ranch. And we've agreed that she's going to come and give a very brief report of their activities on a quarterly basis. And I'll just kind of lump it in at the end of my report 4 times a year so that everyone can hear what they're doing. They work very hard, and I just thought that it would be a good opportunity for the folks to know what's going on out there and what they're doing. And then the other thing that I would like to add to the report for General Manager is to allow the public to get to know Joyce Hannum. She's our conservation specialist now, so she's prepared some very lively public service announcements. And her first one and her debut is today. So she's going to give it to us and make sure the public is aware of her and her services that she makes available on conservation level. Joyce.
Joyce.
Hi, I am Joyce Hannum from the Water Conservation Department with a few words about our rebate and water conservation programs. CCSD is offering $150 rebates if you purchase a qualified Energy Star washing machine, and $100 rebates if you change your 3.5 or 5-gallon toilets to 1.5-gallon toilets. These rebates require original purchase receipts and fixture inspections. In addition, you might be eligible to receive a free hot water recirculation pump. If you have an older home and you have to wait 20 seconds or more for hot water at your tap or shower, you might qualify. A hot water recirculation pump can reduce your waiting time to just 3 or 4 seconds. If you qualify, CCSD provides the pump with instructions, and that's about a $200 value, and then you have it installed. We inspect before and after the installation to document your improvement in hot water transit time. CCSD also pays for the conversion of your existing water softener from a self-regenerating system to a portable exchange system. A self-regenerating water softener uses about 40 to 50 gallons of water each time it flushes itself clean, and you have to lug bags of salt to replenish it. With a portable exchange system, you'll have a nice service person come into your house to take away and replace your cylinders. No more salt and no more wasted water. If you qualify, CCSD will pay Culligan to convert your old system to portable exchange, and that's about a $100 value. The hot water pump and soft water softener programs require full-time occupancy and a minimum water use history. You can call me for details to see if you qualify, and my number is 927-6225, or you can email me at jhannum@cambriacsd.org, and that's J-H-A-N-N-U-M at CambriaCSD.org. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Joyce, very much.
Very good. And last, I did update the Q&A for the Pine Knolls tank. We had the discussion last month. You all made several suggestions, so it's been finalized. It's been posted on the website, and we do have copies available today and at the administrative offices for the district.
And that will be updated as we go through the coastal development permit process.
Correct. As it stands now, it's just through the time we went to court, so I will do some update after we meet with the coastal the Planning Commission next 2 weeks.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Any questions of the general manager?
No, just I'd like to, just a simple comment, and that is that there's been a series of letters to the editors over the past, couple months. I won't identify the writers, but I hope that they would take the time to read your Q&A and consider the fact that they may be barking up the wrong tree.
I think that's a very good suggestion. It does help to investigate the facts. Next, we'll have the report from the fire chief. Chief Putney, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'll have to talk further away. I have a projecting voice. You have my report in front of you. I would like to highlight some of the sections that are in there. Obviously, a lot of my time in the department recently has been spent with the Pine Knolls tank project and also the build-out reduction. Since obviously fire protection is a part of it. If you put the first slide up, please, and I'll do my best not to confuse the hardware here and advance through. We don't have any recent fire investigations, but an ongoing problem that I've been concerned with since I came here as your fire chief is kind of the disregard for human safety that a lot of residents and tourists have in Cambria to electrical power lines. I've actually been accosted at incidents where residents have said, you guys make a lot of hoopla about power lines being down, and I walked over them a minute ago and they were dead. These lines automatically turn themselves back on, and if PG&E does not receive a call in a timely period, their troubleshooter will go out to a remote transit station and will re-energize the lines, not having received a call that there are down power lines. Once that happens, it will arc, go to ground, lock itself out, open back up again. The second time it goes down, it stays locked out, and they begin troubleshooting until they get calls. The picture that's in front of you is an incident that happened in the recent storms in December. If you look, if my pointer here works well, there we are. Right at the back, you can see that white light. That's a 12,000-volt power line that's touching the rear of the car. If you look here at the bottom in the corner, that tire is on fire. We were able to dampen it down and protect the vehicle next to it. The homeowner inside, who was home at the time, he and his wife, he was in slippers and normal nightly attire. And probably his saving grace was he came out in thongs, thick rubber thongs, on his feet, not on his dress. Before anybody goes to the dark side, I could already hear people behind me beginning to chuckle, so I wanted to diffuse that. This is footwear we're talking about, not other type of dress here. Yeah, right.
Hey, Chief, why are you thinking that?
Well, I'm not. I've worked with the dark side of the force and the good side of the force, and I know sometimes people go right to the dark side. So I want to make sure we got away from that. So anyway, he heard a noise outside and saw a flash, and he said something must be wrong. He went out, walked between the two cars, between the white Honda there and their sedan, and seeing a funny light flickering behind the rear tire, this one here, which was on fire, he went ahead and put his hand in the car and kind of kicked it underneath with his sock, and it was raining at the time. The next thing he said is he felt a funny feeling in his chest. He saw these kind of funny lights, and when I pulled up, I was the first one there, and went up and talked to him. He had black marks on his hands. Sorry, Ryan, I'm talking too loud, huh? He had black marks on his hands, and he looked kind of startled, like somebody that just got a $2 million rebate or was just defibrillated by one of our defibrillators that we carry on our engines. I'm not sure which. And so we called an ambulance. Anyway, probably because of the rubber footwear he had on, he did not receive the full shock. The light he saw was a light flickering off of the underside of the undercarriage, the metal of the vehicle, which, since water was dripping off the tire, was going to ground. So he actually helped ground it for a minute. 12,000 volts is more than enough volts to kill you. Anybody that has any electrical training at all knows it's not the voltage that kills you, it's the amperage. And there's more than enough amperage there to reduce them to a smoldering pile of rubble, which is what the tire looked like when we were all done. We were there for 45 minutes, and that power line, which people tell us all the time in Cambria, oh, it's dead, don't worry about it, me and my dog just walked over it, or I've been doing this for years, Sonny, you can't tell me anything. That thing continued to arc and glow until about 10 minutes before PG&E got there. So almost 40, 45 minutes it was arcing and going right through the car, so we couldn't put the fire out. I wanted to use this opportunity to remind Cambrians how deadly these are and the fact that before I was your fire chief, a local resident who went out to investigate a small front yard fire was electrocuted and lost her life here in Cambria. It happens all the time. We take very seriously electrical power lines, and we consider cable lines, telephone lines, house drop telecommunication lines, and power lines as all energized, because often when a tree comes down, the power line will snap. It will react because it's under tension by flipping up over the cable and the telecommunication lines. There's metal banding around the outside of them, so they will carry electricity. So if you're an amateur electrician and you go, well, that's a telephone line, I can pick it up and move it, it may be the last thing you ever do on this earth. Up is forward, right? There we go. There's a little bit better picture. So anyway, I want to take a minute today and talk about that. And at the end is a short statement that I'll make to residents, and hopefully we won't have anybody get killed, as almost happened here.
Chief, while you're on this subject, there was a downed power line a couple of weeks ago during a rainstorm in our neighborhood. And the entire time the line was down until PG&E arrived, it was live. And because it was raining, it was arcing. Firemen did an excellent job. They blocked off the street. They posted a fireman at the site and made sure that everybody knew that it was a dangerous situation.
Well, I appreciate those comments, and my folks do as well. The night that that fire occurred, Captain Bitto was the captain on duty, and he actually elected to stay on Park Hill with a live power line we had down in the street. Even though we had a report of a vehicle fire with power lines down, we did not want to leave no one at the site, just for the simple reason we see people push our red barrier tape that says do not enter, and they go, it's on the ground, it's not arcing, so it must be dead. We know how lackadaisical people are, and I'm going to be working diligently, as so is my training officer, with PG&E electrical public education folks to put out some sort of local brochure to really highlight the danger that because we live in a forest that's aging and the power lines are laced between the trees, that this is an ever-present hazard. We're much more concerned about it in the summertime because of a wildland fire, but it really exists year-round, especially during storm periods. Moving forward, if I can get the next slide to come up here. I'm probably not holding my tongue here, right?
When President Sanders was witnessing the good job he did at Leimert, that he was wearing his thongs.
I was fully clothed.
Oh, okay. I wasn't going to go there since he's a new elected president. He probably has a lightsaber where he could dispatch me quickly. Anyway, under vegetation management, we're working closely this year with CDF to try to get more areas of Cambria to qualify for state and federal funding for defensible space. One of my sideline goals, which most people in Cambria are probably very aware of, is I'm trying to work towards national recognition for all or parts of our community as a FireWise community, which helps with insurance for commercial and residential, and also allows people in a state where fire insurance is being canceled all the time because of the San Diego firestorms and other losses that have occurred to residential property. We're trying to do our best to get in front of that and truly make Cambria fire safe. To that end, this chipper that you see here is the chipper that our taxpayers here in Cambria purchased. We got a $21,000 grant for that. As soon as Air Pollution Control District comes out and inspects it, they will approve it. They will reimburse the district, so our net cost will be zero other than having it. And then for about the next year to 16 months, we have to chip a couple of tons of material. I expect that we'll have that couple of tons chipped probably in the next 4 months. It won't take us a year and a half. That chipper is going to be very, very busy. So we're very happy to have it. A lot of people said, why would a fire department want a chipper, and we want to get rid of the biomass that's sitting around as much as possible. It's a lot better to do that in an era where we can't burn, and we know we have a fire problem that we need to mitigate. So we're real happy to have that on board and look forward to using that throughout the community, also helping out, obviously, with the management and expectations for fire fuel reduction on the East and West Ranch as well. Next slide, please. I think that's probably easier. And you can go ahead to the next one. That's just in case anybody has questions and wonder if we have horses to pull it around. Actually, it's pulled around by vehicle. Next slide, please. A lot of people have seen us recently on the Moonstone Beach area, and we've been training in that building, the building that's slated to be torn down. We're very fortunate to have that building. This is one of our training sessions where we're using Hollywood smoke and a smoke generator and training our people to do vertical ventilation, which allows us to get hot smoke and gases and fire out of the residence so we can affect inside, put a fire out in the smallest footprint, and also reduce property damage and the chances, since we're all air breathers, that we can survive a fire. Most of the time, people die in a fire because of toxic smoke. Next slide, please. So we're using that building to great end, and we're also training other agencies other than ourselves. So if you see any smoke out of there, we're not actually burning anything. It may look like it. It is Hollywood smoke. And when the property owner decides that they want to tear the building down because they are working on a permit to raise the building and put in a new hotel-motel complex, when that goes about, then we won't have it anymore. We'll move some of our props out of there. So I just want to make sure people knew that was going on. Next slide, please. And those are some folks from Hearst Castle Fire and CDF. So it's truly a North Coast area training, and we don't have a training facility other than at Camp San Luis, so it's very beneficial to use that training and be able to actually cut on a roof rather than you can only do so much on PowerPoint. Next slide, please. And next one. This photo and some of the other photos you're going to see here in a minute were provided by Kathy Tanner. Scott Cathy from the sanctuary talked a little bit about the ocean rescue that occurred on January 7th. We opened our local operations center, and if you go ahead and go through the next slide, this is some of the activities that were based going on the shore while we looked for not only the female who was swept off the sailboat, but also the male who was later successfully rescued. Next slide. There's the sailboat, as you can see, a day later. And Scott Cathy aptly talked about Ben Bohr and all the rest of our North Coast Ocean Rescue Team, which we're very, very proud of, and the extra efforts they and our department went to try to make sure that the environmental problem did not come out of this beaching of the sailboat. You can see 5-gallon pails. You can imagine there's spar varnish, there's diesel oil, there's WD-40, there's paint, there's kerosene, there's all that stuff on board a boat, and our folks did a great job trying to collect that and make sure it did not bust up on the beach. Next slide, please. And that's just before it was raised out of the water. The storm raked a havoc in it, and as you can see, the bottom side of the hull is crushed, and a lot of the material that was inside had come out in the surf. So all of our troops and everybody in general really did a great job pulling all that out of there, so we did not have a polluted seashore. Next slide. During the storm, we opened our local operations center here in Cambria early in the morning. I requested 2 CDF hand crews to help clear the streets because I knew the street department or the county roads was going to be very busy. We also brought in an engine and a rescue to help with the call volume we expected, brought Hearst Castle Fire down, and brought in a division chief from the Department of Forestry. During that day, the end result basically was, go ahead, next slide, please, is we had over 50 calls. We had 1 medical emergency, the ocean rescue involving the sailboat, 11 trees into power lines, 20 trees down blocking roads, 8 trees into structures, some with severe structure damage. We had a total of 39 trees come down in 6 hours. We had multiple trees go down in several loops where the power was disrupted for days. And we expect, if the storm track continues as it is, that now that the canopy in Cambria, it's normally heavy, but since the roots are in soil where the pines are shallow rooted and the wind comes up and we get more rain, that root ball and all, more trees will come down. So it's a thing of, it's, you know, expectation of things to come. I'd like to stop here for a second and take a look. If you look here in the front, that looks very innocent right there, that line laying across. That is a cable TV line. And right up here on the other side of this vehicle, there's a power line down across the top touching the metal wrap on this cable TV line. That echoes why we treat all power lines and all lines down on the road as live. Next slide, please. Next slide. And next slide. Next slide. And next slide, please. That's one of the number of buildings that was damaged by trees into homes. Next slide. That one's hard to see, but anyway, next slide, please. Okay, last thing is I wanted to report in here. During the December 30th storm, several trees and we had some road damage. This occurred on Hillcrest Drive. What happened here is the water from the upslope side percolated down underneath and basically allowed some movement of soil underneath and allowed the road to collapse. As of December 30th, the County Road Department advised us we could take no fire engines or any heavy equipment up that road, and it was closed until yesterday where they did a temporary patch. This is an area that I've talked to the County Roads Department about, Supervisor Bianchi, and several other people, because this is an extremely narrow portion. People who live up in Pine Knolls recognize this is the narrow point where you have to stop and allow a passenger vehicle come the other direction. We were not able to use that from December 30th until yesterday. They have a temporary patch. They assure us that they will tear the roadbed out, and I'm concerned that they repair it, but I'm also concerned that they work towards attempts at widening it so that, because that's also one of the proposed evacuation routes for people on the Pine Knolls area to evacuate in the event of any emergency. So they've got a temporary patch. We'll keep an eye on it and make sure that that it holds, and we are looking forward to them to basically repair it permanently so that it's not a temporary fix. Next slide, please. There's another picture. The concern was is if our engines, which weigh anywhere from 30,000 pounds all the way up to the water tender, weighs about 46,000 pounds, that the road surface, since there's water underneath it, it could give way. The vehicle would then start to list, roll down in the canyon, killing our firefighters, and there's several homes below, and obviously anyone in the homes would be gone as well. So we effectively could not use that road for that period of time. And there's Windsor Construction taking some debris off the hillside, and as you can see, they've actually got the truck into the bank. And I can get my pickup truck by, but the engine can't go by the other way for two reasons. One is that this slope here is right at the edge, and there really is no edge of pavement, and it's just very narrow. So we look forward to them fixing that. Next slide, please. And that's some of the material down below, and there's one of the homes that's right above the slide. Next one. And next one. One more, please. And you can see there's some of the gravel and some of the debris they piled on the side to try to hold it up as a temporary patch. This is a road that we're critically worried about. I'll obviously be real concerned about it in wildland season, because if we have a wildland fire up there, people are going to be coming down it while we try to go up it. And there's only two ways up. There's the way to go up Hillcrest, and then there's the area above the Midstate Bank, Pine Knolls. So that's the only two ways to get up there. Next slide, please. And next one. This is Sunbury. This closed the first part of January and was just temporarily fixed yesterday. This is also one of several parts of Sunbury and Croydon that are extremely narrow. The road buckled and started to slough downhill, and we were also told we could not respond in on that. We made a temporary response plan where our engine would respond with our smaller rescue. So if it was a medical, they could go up the road, park the engine at the bottom, leave it. If it is a structure fire, we had to go all the way around to the other end or go up Pine Knolls Drive, if it was up on Pine Knolls, since we couldn't use Hillcrest initially. This also has a temporary patch on it. County is very, very aware that these need to be fixed, and we're going to be working with them not only to widen them so they make the 20 feet width fire code state standards, but also that we've got a road service that will be there when we need it. That's our concern. So it's temporarily patched now, and we can use the road again. Next slide. And I believe that's it. Last thing I wanted to say basically is I'm very, very proud of all of our people in our department who worked very hard during the storms. We had some 16, 18, 20-hour days, worked very, very well. You can go ahead and shut it off. We worked very, very well with the County Road Department. And just to sum up what I've said earlier, I'd really like to emphasize that residents in Cambria, that if they see any power line or any line down at all, even if it appears to be an antenna cable coming off the roof. That they consider it energized, stay away and call us. And what we're going to do is wrap red danger tape, stay out, and keep people back until PG&E comes out. A small story I'll say that I'll tell you, and then I want to cut this off because I don't want to spend too much time, but I think it's important. In my career, I can't tell you how many times I've had senior PG&E and Southern California Edison officials tell me as the incident commander or an engine captain or a truck captain the line was de-energized. They went up with their insulated gloves to pick it up, and one of their employees was knocked on the ground. After cussing and being okay because they had the proper safety equipment, they found out as the professionals a line they thought was dead was energized, and they could have lost their lives. I can't emphasize enough how safety-oriented we would like Cambrians to be. I would hate to end my fire service career by going to a fatality here that was preventable in Cambria because someone belittled the end result that could occur by stepping over a line that they deemed dead when actually it's an accident waiting to happen. I'd be glad to answer any questions. Also, there was something I didn't talk about very much, but we did have a kayak rescue that turned out to be a vacated kayak. In my staff report, you'll see that I've asked Cambrians if they're friends or neighbors or if they're locals and they lose a piece of boating equipment in Santa Rosa or San Simeon Creek, please let us know it's been lost. That if it washes down and a citizen sees it, we can put the owner and the incident that it was lost together, and we don't put, in the case of this one incident that occurred at the end of December, we had 40 rescuers in harm's way at the peak of the storm with Santa Rosa Creek moving 30 to 40 miles an hour down on the banks next to the water looking for someone that was swept away because a kayak and a paddle went downstream together. So we have to assume someone's in the surf, someone's in trouble. And so if that happens and people lose a boat or a craft, please let us know, and we won't put our people in harm's way and maybe lose a firefighter or a North Coast Ocean Rescue member. So I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions of board members?
Thanks.
Thank you, Chief, for a very good report. Would you mind keeping the board apprised of the county's response to your request that the roads that you identified be repaired?
I will, and I will also keep you apprised of the other roads that I've asked them to bring up to standard because they are substandard.
Terrific. Thank you. Next item is the Utilities Manager Report. Brian Bode.
I'll try to keep this as brief as possible. Congratulations on your presidency. And
thank you.
Especially to Joan for last year. She did a great job. I just wanted to echo that.
You bet.
And thank her, too. First of all, a correction. It's on all three graphs. It's actually January 14th, 2005, not 2004. Right. 2004 went too fast. But I just point out that both well fields are full. As a matter of fact, they've been fuller than any time since we've been keeping records. I'd just like to point out that the watersheds are completely charged. I'm worried a little bit about any big rain that we get, a Pineapple Express or something like that. We're going to end up with downtown being flooded, so we need to be really careful and watchful for that. And when we have a big rain come in, we're going to be on it before anything happens. But this is an unusual time. You can see that the wells are full. Both creeks are running full. The last rain we had, I happened to miss almost all of it. And being out of the country, but when I got back, I noticed that Santa Rosa Creek had run muddy for over a week, almost 10 days, and it usually cleans up in a couple days. So there's just a lot of water moving out of those hills, and we're probably going to have to deal with it. And our wet months are February and March, so we haven't really hit the wet months. A couple of things I'll just go over and highlight. We had a tour, or a Matrix Imaging's Mindy Kramer presented a demonstration to staff on digital imaging. Staff got to take a look at it pretty much for the first time. It was a quick review. They probably didn't get to see what it can really do, but they got a good heads up on what it can do and the power of the software and how we can digitally scan all of our documents, put them on a server, and be able to find them with a simple queries and pull up all our documents without having to go through boxes and try to find this stuff. And we're working on that in the next few weeks. We'll start to kick this thing off and try to get the software and the hardware going. also emergency response plan. That's part of Homeland Security. We finished that with the help of PayPros Inc. and Hutch Nagaraj, and I'd like to thank him for that. And it's a good document. It got to County or Department of Health Services, and also a certified copy to the Environmental Protection Agency on time. The solids dewatering screw press to help our district engineer out so he can concentrate more just on the major water projects and our water master plan. We're going to be kind of heading that up with the wastewater department and Ken Limberry to help us get this kicked off and get going. And we're already on it. We're working on it right now. The AMR system, the automatic meter reading system, we're going to buy half the meters right now. It takes about 6 to 8 weeks to get them going, and we should have a contract to go out here in the next month, so for your approval, and we'll get on that. And as soon as the contract goes out, we'll order the other half, and that's just to keep the cash flow good with Patrick. I'd also like to point out a little bit, it's not in your report, but on the SCADA system, CyberNet sent me an email, and they're looking for a request for information so they can finish this project off, and it should be done in the next 30 days as well. And we'll have a master plan for SCADA that can be used from here on out. And with that, any questions?
Thank you, Brian. Board members have any questions of Brian Bode? Brian, before you leave the podium, the district received a very complimentary letter from Mrs. Boutros, commending Ben Easton on a terrific job he did for her in the middle of the night when she experienced some problems. And would you pass on the board's thanks to Ben?
Oh, absolutely. That's great. Thank you.
Next is the district engineer's report. Bob, do you have anything other than what you commented on earlier?
I'll be very, very brief. I appreciate Brian's help on the biosolids project, so I'm looking forward to getting that project done. I realize its importance. The categorical exemption on that was filed this past week, and I'm also in the process of getting some assistance from a contract planner to help with some of the permitting issues. I think I'll have something for you by the next board meeting on that. To help along with that process. Other than that, the Crosstown Trail is on the consent calendar today for NOSA completion. That's it.
Thank you. Any questions of the district engineer? And finally, Patrick Bradley, the finance officer.
Thank you, President Sanders, members of the board. You've got my report in front of you. I won't go into it in a great deal of detail. The audit and the budget are coming up on the agenda today. The one thing I would like to mention, I mentioned the Crosstown Trail donation had been received. One thing I failed to put in my report, we also received the Phillips property reimbursement from the State Coastal Commission, Coastal Conservancy. It'd be nice if we got it from the Coastal Commission, huh?
Yeah. It'd be nice to get anything from the Coastal Commission.
Yeah, dream on, huh? At some point in the near future, I would really like to consider bringing an ordinance in front of you where the district collects the public facility fees at the district office. Right now, it's somewhat of a moot issue because we're not going through a whole lot of development. But this, we would collect it rather than the county. And it gives us a little bit more control over the fees, the fact that they are collected, and that we are receiving the money that we should be getting. So that is something I really would like to pursue. The last thing also on here is we do need to do a revision of our connection permit fee. And right now, again, because of the lack of development, it's not that critical. But as we move forward, and particularly as DCEL gets closer and closer, and we do have even some people currently in the pipeline, we really do need to revisit that fee and increase it. So that concludes my report. Are there any comments or questions?
Thank you, Patrick. You'll be bringing those two items to the board at a future date.
Yes, I will.
Any questions of Patrick? Thank you. Next item on the agenda is member and committee reports. Any board member reports? Hearing none, we'll move to the consent agenda. Item 7B has been deleted. Is there a motion to approve the balance of the consent calendar?
So move.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the balance of the consent calendar. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Would this be an appropriate time to take a short break, or do you want to plow on? Fine. We'll take a 10-minute recess.
It'll go fast.